is Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Cipriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms both in the system and within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Cipriano, and my guest today is Michael C. Rupert, publisher of From the Wilderness. And some of you may know of him, and some of may not. I first heard about Mike Rupert when he exposed the connections between the Los Angeles Police Department, for which he worked as a narcotics agent at that time, the Los Angeles Police Department, the CIA, and bringing crack into Los Angeles. This is many years later now. Mike suffered a lot of repercussions from that, bringing that news, and he's still bringing news that we need to know, information that we need to know. He's here in the San Francisco Bay Area, where there has been a series of panel discussions about September 11th. And so that's what we're going to be talking about, what really happened on September 11th, or at least what are the questions, even if we don't know the answers. And Mike is going to give you a little rundown about that. Welcome, Mike, and just fill the audience in. Probably, you know, some people know a lot and some people don't know anything, but we think this is a very important issue.
Okay. Well, in of course, the crush of events in the last 6 months or so, we've all focused on Iraq exclusively. Sometimes seemingly to forget the events of 9/11. There are some people, including myself, who think that it's been a convenient development for the Bush administration as investigations into 9/11 seem to get overlooked. There's a great many unanswered questions about what happened on 9/11.
And we must not forget that, of course, it's a basic justification for all this war on terror.
Of course, and which is absolute nonsense. There was has never been any demonstrated connection under any circumstances between Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and Saddam Hussein, even though I've seen some polls indicating that some 40% of the American people, as a result of the propaganda, believe that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11, which he did not. The government, if pressed, will admit that completely. But 9/11 was the watershed moment, which in effect change the whole world paradigm. I've been saying in my newsletter From the Wilderness almost since 9/11 that the world as we knew it ceased to exist on 9/11, and we're living in a whole new world. Dick Cheney has talked about a war which will not end in our lifetimes, and we are witnessing that war progressing from Iraq, I think, eventually to Saudi Arabia, to Colombia, to West Africa, any place there are significant oil reserves because the planet is running out of oil. But with regards to 9/11 itself, we went through a brief period about a year ago where there are all these really serious revelations about what the government had known before 9/11, and it's what one senator, Bob Graham, who was the chair at one point of the Senate Intelligence Committee, had categorized as worse than gross failures. He lamented the fact that he couldn't say more because of his secrecy oaths. But we knew after the brief hearings that took place a year ago that the government had complete knowledge that aircraft could be used as weapons to attack major structures, which proved that the Bush administration was lying when they said, gee, we didn't know airplanes could do that. We know from the FBI investigations that in Minneapolis and Phoenix in particular, they had penetrated the FBI, the BRIC agents, the agents on the street had penetrated Al-Qaeda flight training operations, and they even wrote in their notes that planes were going to be crashed into the World Trade Center, and yet these investigations were brutally often suppressed at FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C. We know that foreign intelligence services, including the French, German, Russian, the Jordanian and Moroccan intelligence services, had penetrated Al-Qaeda to the point where they were warning of specific attacks. And one of the early stories that we wrote From the Wilderness showed that the U.S. government documented, I mean, there was no question about it, had received detailed intelligence warnings, sometimes from heads of state, in the case of Vladimir Putin, that hijackers on suicide missions were going to hijack airliners in the week of September the 9th and crash them into the World Trade Center. Other information around insider trading disclosed that the U.S. government, which monitors stock trades in real time, would have known also that the airliners were going to be from United and American. So there was very specific foreknowledge of the attacks, and yet the U.S. government did nothing to stop the attacks. And in fact, on the day of the attacks, there is now an overwhelming case that the U.S. government, from the highest levels, intervened with standard operating procedures to prevent fighter jets from intercepting the aircraft, not shooting down, but intercepting the aircraft, so that the attacks could succeed.
You know, one thing people often say is that, well, you know, these conspiracy things, and I notice that it's only called conspiracy theory when it's critical of the mm-hmm. U.S. government. It's not critical when, you know, it's not called conspiracy theory when they talk, when they come up with their own theories about things, and that's what they often are, is theories with less evidence than there is about September 11th here. In any case, a lot of people say, well, this couldn't be because too many people would have to know about it for there have to been foreknowledge, and there would certainly be people coming out and talking about it by now, and it's just too hard to pull off.
Well, some people actually have come out and talked about it, and of course they've suffered the whistleblower treatment. We had Air Force Colonel Steve Butler, who had been at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, who came out and said that the administration had foreknowledge. He was threatened with a court-martial and imprisonment. He was threatening to demand a trial, and his case has kind of gone away. Apparently, he had information that took care of him. We had several FBI agents come forward. We had Colleen Rowley, who was one of the Time Magazine's Women of the Year, who wrote a devastating memorandum, which, if you read it closely, and it was posted on the Time Magazine website, Newsweek website, which shows clearly that they had penetrated. This was the case where the FBI note said, Osama bin Laden's going to hijack an airliner and crash it into the World Trade Center. What's going on? Why won't Washington let us do something? We had Special Agent Robert Wright of Chicago, who had penetrated Al-Qaeda financing, who could have turned off some of the money for 9/11, who held a tearful press conference at the National Press Club where he apologized to the families of 9/11 because his investigation was brutally suppressed by, it turns out, the same supervisory agent who sat on the Minneapolis case, a man by the name of Dave Frasca. We have the Phoenix memo with Special Agent Ken Williams, where some of the 9/11 hijackers were taking flight training lessons, and they were saying, somebody's got to look into this. We don't understand what's going on. We have two of the 9/11 hijackers, Al-Hamzi and Al-Midar, who, while they were on terrorist watch lists, wanted had California driver's license, credit cards, and were living openly with publicly listed phone numbers in San Diego at the home of an FBI informant. And yet the official position of the government was, gee, we can't find them, which is nonsense. So there are still a great many holes. Now, the point that I have made consistently, having studied covert operations for 25 years, and I have 35 members of Congress who read my newsletter, have a great many inside intelligence sources, a counter spin, if you will, that's placed on this is, gee, this conspiracy would have involved thousands of people. No, it wouldn't. It involves a few key people in various places. And in my forthcoming book, which will be out this fall, Crossing the Rubicon, America's Descent into Fascism at the End of the Age of Oil, I show clearly which key people I have identified were involved in 9/11. At the State Department, we have a guy by the name of Carl Rick Inderfirth, who was a carryover from the Clinton to the Bush administration, who at the State Department level was the protector, let's say the godfather of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, making sure that they had plenty of arms at the exclusion of others, that they were not put out of business when they could have, who had facilitated Taliban expansion and Al-Qaeda movement throughout Afghanistan almost as a part of U.S. policy. At the FBI, we have one special agent, Dave Frasca, who sat on five separate investigations, each of which might have prevented 9/11. In terms of the fighter aircraft, additional research I have done, aside from showing how the fighters were ordered to stand down or diverted away from or not called properly, all the attention focuses now on the National Hijack Coordinator, one person who sat on the button for scrambling fighters on 9/11. So if you look at this pattern, you see, what I've known for a long time, and most people who are familiar with covert operations know, is that you don't need thousands of people. You just need many key people. And what's key about all this is that, for example, the one FBI supervisory agent who suppressed brutally sometimes these five separate investigations that could have prevented the attacks was actually promoted right after 9/11.
Well, that's a lot of names you name there, Mike Rupert. And I want to let people know that, and there is a lot of information. I've been looking into this for a while and listening to you for a while, and I've just learned a lot of new things. So if people get overwhelmed, or even if they don't, if you want to see stuff in print, you can go to Mike's, among others, a website, which is COPVCIA.com.
There's also a much easier way to remember it, because people confuse the V's and the B's. FromTheWilderness.com, which is the name of my newsletter. We're now in 35 countries with more than 8,000 subscribers worldwide.
Yeah, well, there you can get lots of information, so do that. I want to say that also I'm going to put up on a Radio for All. That's a website, www.radio4all.net. RadioForAll.net, the audio of at least one of the panels that happened here with Mike Rupert and Peter Dale Scott and Reva Entin and Richard Heinberg. So you can listen to that. So there's a lot of ways to get information here, but probably not on CBS, or probably not on the corporate media. Mike, you're saying that all these 35 people in Congress get your newsletter, and that your newsletter, and they've been looking at it for a while. I wonder why there's not more talk about this key thing of September 11th.
Well, number one, there is a climate of fear in this country that you really must acknowledge. People are scared here. I mean, the message from George W. Bush, you're either with us or with the terrorists, and Ari Fleischer saying you have to watch what you say. There are many people who believe, and I am one of them, that we're living in a fascist police state right now. And people are afraid of that. Of course, I'm not afraid. I don't care. I'll say what I'm going to say, because that's what and who I am. And I think there is a lot of courage being shown in some circles. But also, events have been moving so rapidly that 9/11, in the wake of the invasion of Iraq and the horrible debacle that's being created there now, that country's going to be in chaos, and the U.S. has no intention of leaving that country. It has 11% of the oil reserves on the planet, and the U.S. is totally going to be an occupying force. It's going to stay that way. So things seem to be moving fast. The feeling that we've had in the two events here in San Francisco and Palo Alto in the last couple of days is that the freight train is moving at like 80 miles an hour, and by the time you grab onto an issue, all you get is the caboose. You can't reach the locomotive, even if you get the caboose. But there is something extremely important to understand about 9/11 that needs to be focused upon, because that's the underpinning for everything that's taking place right now.
Exactly. Well, I ask myself oftentimes why I work on this issue so much, and people are often so resistant to hearing about it. And that it does seem like, if, you know, I always have the hope that if people understand what's going on, it'll make a difference.
Well, again, we have to penetrate denial. The analogy that I have used for decades, because I caught CIA dealing drugs 25 years ago. And by the way, the CIA was not bringing crack into Los Angeles. They were bringing powdered cocaine into Los Angeles. It was on that technicality that CIA dismissed some of the hard evidence, because the semantics weren't right. It's a legal thing. But 25 years I've been out here doing this, and many other people have, and we've watched things get progressively worse. But we're not afraid, because we've seen what's coming, and we know that what's coming is only worse. But the analogy that I've used for 25 years, or let's say 20 to 25 years, is that we live in a country that's like a dysfunctional family, wherein the father is molesting the youngest daughter, and everybody in the family maintains a conspiracy of silence, very guilty silence, because they're afraid of what will happen to the family or their well-being if the family were shown to be dysfunctional or have that disease in it. And that's becoming somewhat easier to penetrate. We're seeing some quickening of consciousness in the country. A lot of people are starting to ask questions, because many people are being affected. We've lost parts or all of the 1st, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 8th Amendments to the Constitution, our precious Bill of Rights, and further assaults are pending. So we're clearly being affected by what's happening now.
Yeah. That's for sure. Do you have the impression in your movements around the United States and somewhat the world that people are understanding this? I suppose automatically if they're coming to hear you, they're interested. But you say you meet a lot of different people.
The world has a completely different view than we do. The world is not in American denial. I was recently in Amsterdam after the start of the Iraqi war. And Amsterdam is a huge multicultural city. I mean, you flip to the TV, you get French, German, Italian, English TV, and all those papers are available. And there was a completely different war being talked about than the ones the Americans saw on CNN, Fox, ABC, and so forth. The world has a pretty good glimpse of, grasp on what's going on. It's the American people who don't.
So you do have the impression that the American people don't, also.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Until it happens to them personally, it seems like it takes that for people to get it, or them or somebody in their family gets killed or imprisoned, and then it can be too late.
Well, you opened the door for my favorite line of all time, which I'm kind of known for. It's like my tagline, that in a ham and eggs breakfast, the chicken is involved, but the pig is committed. And as the American people become pigs and watch themselves being served up on the plate, which is happening not only in terms of civil liberties, it's happening very much in terms of the looting of our treasury, the total looting of Social Security, which is now insolvent. The Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation is insolvent. The Department of Defense has lost or had stolen $3.3 trillion of taxpayer money in 1999-2000, the fiscal years, and that's taxpayer money. The economy is in rags, and all of that is a direct result of the same kind of fascist corporate profiteering that we see taking place all over the world. The American people are now being eaten on the plate as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would be willing to bet that most people don't know about what you just said about what's happening with the money. I mean, as they feel money cut from services going into the military, they're going to feel that. But I bet they don't know this about the disappearing part.
Yeah, yeah. This is not money being taken just out of Social Security to go buy some tanks. This is money that has been stolen, gone. CBS News did it. Rumsfeld had a brief press conference. It was acknowledged. Hey, $2.1 trillion in 2000. We don't know where it went. Now, smart people will say, wait a minute, Mike, the military budget's only $400 billion a year. How can the Pentagon lose $2.1 trillion in 1 year? And my response is very simple. The Pentagon manages the pension funds for 2.5 million military personnel, for about 1 million civilian employees. It operates real estate franchises, leases. When money for weapons systems are appropriated, say an $800 million weapons system, over 5 years, the $800 million goes into the Pentagon account, but only $200 million shows up on each year's budget. So the Pentagon manages trillions and trillions of dollars, and isn't it strange that the data processing, the financial records management for the Pentagon and HUD, which is missing about $100 billion overall, they've just lost the money, is handled by Lockheed Martin and DynCorp, one of the most atrocious government contractors, paramilitary corporations on the planet, that's been linked to child sex rings in Bosnia, that's being sued in Colombia for spraying the population with horrible poisonous chemicals and deforestation. And these countries are getting handout contracts, no-bid contracts in Iraq right now.
So what do you think's happened to that money?
Companies. It's been moved offshore. We know that. We don't know exactly, but we do know that the wealth of America is being stolen. It's gone. We don't know exactly. Some of it, I am certain, America's financial markets are rigged. We have a thing called the Plunge Protection Team, which has been documented and admitted by the Washington Post, New York Times. The New York Post has done some good work on it. That our markets are rigged, and that the government, in conjunction with major banks like Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, will intervene by making massive buys in the market, and that money has to come from someplace, and it's coming from the Treasury. So on top of all the financial fraud we've had, isn't it interesting that the U.S. government last year, the Congressional Budget Office, in response to a request from Senator Fritz Hollings, refused to submit audited budget statements. Now, how can we go to corporations like Enron or WorldCom and say you must submit audited financial statements when the U.S. Treasury won't do that.
Well, Mike Rupert, I imagine now people are getting ready to turn off the turn off the radio because they're getting so depressed and overwhelmed, or maybe they're not. But it does happen often that it's a lot of information to take in. It really shakes people up a lot. So it's really important to talk about what we can do, because not only is it important to talk about it, it's important to do it.
Well, yeah.
I heard you talking about Congress, that they're only – anyway, I'd like you to talk about this, writing letters to your Congress people.
People are very misinformed, and that's by design, as to about what they should do or what they can do. And assuming that Congress is going to jump to your rescue is futile, and you're supposed to go do that because it's wasted energy. It's like casting your seed upon a rock. It's not going to bear any fruit. The only people in Congress who can really do anything are the committee chairs or the ranking members of committees or the party leadership. So we're talking out of 525 elected members of the U.S. Congress and the Senate and House, maybe 25, 30 who really control the events of what's going on. And those people are already bought and paid for by the corporations. We've seen some very brave voices speak out. Cynthia McKinney, of course, she was resoundingly punished for having spoken out. On the left, her political photo negative, Bob Barr, a conservative Republican who was defending the Bill of Rights, was also had his campaign sabotaged. We've seen, I think, Paul Wellstone was murdered. I think there's very good evidence to show that. We've seen a lot of people in Congress punished, but we've had some voices speaking out, like Ron Paul of Texas, who has really defended the Constitution, John Conyers of Michigan. Jim Sensenbrenner has been very vocal in his defense of the Constitution. We've had Ron Wyden of Oregon. We've had a lot of people say special things, but no one in Congress has the power to change anything, period.
And all, why is that? Is all these executive orders?
No.
It's that unless you get the 25 or 30 people who run Congress, you're not going to change anything. You can't get a bill to the floor to be voted on unless you get it out of committee.
Okay.
So what do you suggest to do?
There are a great many things that can be done. First of all is remember the old axiom from psychotherapy, which is that insanity is repeating the same action expecting different results. We had incredibly wonderful large turnout demonstrations before the Iraqi war. Now we've had the Iraqi war. What good do the demonstrations do, and where are those millions of people now? They were focusing, in my opinion, on a symptom rather than a cause. They refused to talk about 9/11 for whatever reason, controlled from the inside. They refused to talk about the election of 2000. Those are issues which remain with us today.
I'm just going to interrupt for a second and say, yeah, I think it's give my opinion that I think it's very strange that a lot of people in leadership positions are not talking about September 11th,
right.
And some people even get up to the point where that should be the next sentence, and then they just stop. So that in itself is worth looking at.
Well, yeah, I mean, much of the debate on the so-called left has been framed. I mean, it's pretty well known that as I was getting a lot of attention worldwide last year, all of a sudden a very large orchestrated campaign was mounted to try to discredit me. And that came from various parts of the so-called left, which function very much like a dysfunctional family to set the limits of debate. And by setting the limits of debate, they really guarantee that whatever actions take place are guaranteed to be impotent in terms of what they produce by way of results.
Mm-hmm. So that's something to look out for. There's so many things to look out for, but yet we want to stay relaxed and not get in too much fear. Not in any fear.
Well, there's a difference between relaxed and fear. I'm not afraid, but there's many times when I'm not relaxed. There's many times when I'm outraged, and I should be, and many people should be. I mean, we've lost almost half the Bill of Rights, and there are pending bills like Patriot Act II that will go even deeper into the erosion of civil liberties. Homeland Security has not yet begun to be felt. There's a whole area of bioterrorism and biowarfare, which I've been writing about extensively, that people need to wake up to, that's being used as a social control mechanism. But people are waking up over a period of time. We've had 30 cities pass referenda opposing the Patriot Act, 30 to 40 cities. The state of New Mexico has passed a resolution encouraging its law enforcement officers to not enforce any laws which violate the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. There is a resistance movement that is actually growing in this country, and it's creative, and it's not letting its activities be defined by what I would call the controlled left tells them are acceptable means, which don't produce results. The only way you can afford to judge this now in this perilous time is by judging what produces results.
Okay. Well, I'm just thinking what produces results. There's so much to think about because sometimes you don't know real quick. Mm-hmm. And we don't have much time left here, so you might want to talk about your website and any closing words. Okay. Mike Ruper.
Well, we'll have a book coming out in the fall of 2003 called Crossing the Rubicon, America's Descent into Fascism at the End of the Age of Oil. I chose that word fascism very carefully. Most people, again, don't know that in the 20s and 30s, the terms fascism and corporatism were used interchangeably. Mussolini even thought that the term corporatism was a better term. That'll be out in the fall. You can visit the website at www.fromthewilderness.com. We have a great many free stories there, a lot of resources. You can also subscribe to the subscriber stories. And we continue to present evidence that you won't get anywhere, but we also have a lot of links to a lot of other websites who are doing tremendous work around the country and around the world. Michelle Chosudovsky's in Canada, Indie Media, we have Guerrilla News. There's a lot of websites that we plug because we give energy back to the people that are feeding the world health food as opposed to junk food.
Mm-hmm. Great, I like that analogy. Okay, well, thank you very much, Mike Ruper from the Wilderness. We've been talking about September 11th and the real... you didn't even say if you think the United States was involved in setting this up. We have 2 seconds.
There's absolutely no question the U.S. has direct culpability for the events of 9/11. We've tracked $100,000 wired by the head of Pakistani intelligence to Mohammed Atta weeks before the attack, at the same time that the head of Pakistani intelligence was here visiting with the director of the CIA. There's a great many hard pieces of evidence showing not only that the U.S. let the attacks happen now, but now we can show that the U.S. had complicity in facilitating the attacks.
Okay, well, hear more and read more at From the Wilderness. Go to Radio for All. And we've been talking with Mike Ruper, and my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening. To order a copy of the program you just heard, write down the following information. The email is sue@suesupriano.com. That's Sue, S-U-E, at Sue Supriano, SUESUPRIANO.com. Or the telephone is 510-883-1979. That's 510-883-1979.